So I'm pleased to be here presenting on behalf of a group of us who have done a project. So credit my co-authors, Dr. Simon French, who's Canadian Chiropractic Research Foundation chair with us at Queen's, David Barber, Rachel Morecambe from the Department of Family Medicine, Jonathan Hill from Keele University in the United Kingdom, Graham Leverett and Jordan Miller may be known to some of you. They're both OPA members, but they're not here today. So talking about a feasibility study implementing the start back model of care with respect to managing people with low back pain. So our objectives, which were laid out in our, that we want you to understand the rationale for the use of the StartBack tool in primary care as component of management and be able to discuss our results of our feasibility study. So probably I'm preaching to the choir here. Low back pain, one of the most common problems in primary care settings, and the health and function of people experiencing back pain has deteriorated despite the escalating costs of healthcare devoted to this problem. And Lancet just put out a couple of new things, and WCPT's big press release yesterday was about this Lancet series around the escalating costs, and we're just not solving this problem of the management of low back pain. So if you heard it, who's heard of StartBack? Quite a few people. Okay. Just to keep everybody up to speed, it was developed by Jonathan Hill, who's a physiotherapist in the United Kingdom at Keele. And it is a method of stratifying. So using a tool, getting a fairly simple simple set of questions that people answer, and looking to stratify their risk. And so it's not risk of it being a complicated low back pain case in the sense of the underlying biomechanics or physiology, it's around the risk of persisting pain and disability. So this is the structure. I apologize, the questions are a bit small for those of you at the back of the room. It's essentially 8 yes-no questions. Has your back pain spread down your legs at some time in the last 2 weeks? Have you had pain in the shoulder or neck sometime in the last 2 weeks? Have you only walked short distances? Dressed more slowly than usual? And then we get into, at number 5, we start getting into questions like, do you think it's really not safe for a person with a condition like yours to be physically active? Have worrying thoughts been going through your mind a lot of the time, etc.? And then down at the bottom, how bothersome? We decided not to change it from the UK. We think we might need a better word in Canada than bothersome, but anyway. So the way it's scored is that if a person's total score is 3 or less, and down at the bottom, these things are just scored as like 0 for the lower 3 and 1 for the upper 2. If their score is 3 or less, their risk is low. If their score is 4 or more, you have to look at the subscore. 4 or more, but their subscore for the last questions is still low, then 3 or less, then the patient's category is medium risk of persisting pain and disability. And if it's 4 or more and the subscore for the bottom is 4 or more, high risk for persisting pain and disability, because they're answering yes to a lot of questions around worrisome thoughts, they feel their back pain's terrible, they've stopped doing things they enjoy. So that's the start back. So the concept is that you match the treatment to their risk of persisting pain and disability. This is assuming that you've ruled out all sorts of things around red flags, etc., because most of low back pain is not that complicated at the level of, it does not have the red flags. So low risk of persisting pain and disability, evidence-based approach, advice, reassurance, pain relief, avoiding over-treatment and investigation. Medium risk, again, advice, reassurance, and pain relief, and evidence-based physical therapy. At high risk, standard PT care plus comprehensive biopsychosocial treatment. So addressing the gaps in the patient knowledge, addressing the misunderstandings, addressing essentially the fear on the psychological prognostic indicators around catastrophizing and low mood. And so within the budget of the study, one of the things we did is we took Graham Leverett and said, how'd you like to go to the United Kingdom for a couple weeks to take the Keele course? So he went there to learn about that approach. And so the evidence for StartBack, Jonathan Hill has been, and his group has been publishing a lot, and it's a validated prognostic tool, proof of principle RCT, published in The Lancet in 2011, and then the Foster et al. Published in the Annals of Family Medicine in 2014. Look at the sample sizes, really strong. So this is a highly recommended evidence-based way of stratifying risk of persistent pain and disability. So is it feasible in our context? This was our fundamental question. Simon, I was a co-investigator or co-applicant with him, we tried a CIHR application and they said, first run a feasibility trial before we'll give you any big money. The start-back model significantly improved patients' functional outcomes. The effect size of 0.32 at 6 months, for those of you who pay attention to effect sizes, like, that's actually pretty good. And 50% reduction in time off work due to back pain and reduced healthcare costs. But this is all in the national health system. This is in a system where if the person is screened for this and the referral to physio is still within the national health system and is paid for. And so, when I went looking for flags, I like to not do wordy PowerPoints if I can avoid it. It's like, just because we have the Union Jack in our flag, it is not a similar health system as we all know. It is a very different system in terms of what are the abilities for people in the community to get community-based physiotherapy. So is it feasible? Because the ultimate aim or hope that we had, Simon leading us, is a fully powered cluster randomized control trial. So if you're not familiar with that jargon around a cluster randomized control trial, is that you randomize practices into implementing an approach. Simon's an implementation scientist. You randomize practice groups, so a family health team or a physio practice, depending on what your study's about, and then all the patients they recruit are in the same arm of the study as they are. So the blues and the reds indicate you would randomize some practices to using the start back and really trying to use it properly, and then the others would be your control, and we just say keep going with the usual care. So that's what we hope to get to. So is it feasible? So the purpose of our current study, undertake a feasibility study to determine our feasibility to do a fully powered randomized control trial in Ontario. So our questions were, can we successfully recruit physicians in a family health team? Can we successfully recruit patients through recruitment strategies at that family health team? Can we get the start-back tool implemented in that family health team care setting? Will patients get the matched treatment appropriate to their risk category? And then what proportion of recruited patients will do all the questionnaires? Because that's their main thing, is to do that. Other than, of course, the treatment, but that's not part of the experiment, it is the actual treatment. The experiment is, do they get referred to the appropriate treatment? And then, so those were kind of some quantitative things, and qualitatively, what do patients and physicians think about the start-back tool and the appropriate, the determination of appropriate treatment? So, whoops, that jumped ahead on me. One academic family health team, academic. So lots of them spend time teaching, lots of them spend time research. That's actually why we went. It was the Queen's Family Health Team. So 14 physicians are 5 full-time equivalents because a lot of them spend a lot of time teaching. And so their number of clinical hours per week, for example, is an average of 16.7. So they attended 2 workshops on the management of low back pain. We got 14 of the 22. Mean age 50, 71% female. And our flow chart, sorry, this is a bit small, but we really wanted to make sure the physicians didn't have to do the ask unless somehow they got through the clinic reception staff, and the routine there is that the first person that the patient sees after the receptionist is a nurse who takes some basic vitals and some basic information. And so we had recruitment packages at the front desk. If it was clear it was low back pain was part of the reason, one or the only reason they were seeing the physician, or the nurse would recruit them. And ultimately, if all of that got missed and low back pain only got revealed during the family doctor visit, then we usually follow up with a letter to see if we could recruit. So that was our recruitment strategy. So 6 months, 14 physicians, granted only 5 full-time equivalents, lots of residents at that place. Only 36 patients recruited. Almost all of them came through the clinic reception staff, so our strategy of how to recruit was probably the correct one. 10 of them had to be excluded, 5 because the patient's doctor was not one of our participating doctors, because the receptionist would have, say, 2 doctors running down like parallel hallways and would recruit all the back pain patients, but if we only had one of those two physicians consented for the study, then we had to say thank you, but no, we can't accept you. So five on patient's doctor not participating, four on clinical eligibility, and one recruited got phoned by our research assistant and then later refused. So of the 26, we did a questionnaire where 21 of them actually followed through on that to answer the question about demographics. So average age was actually pretty high. 59 was our mean, up to from 19 to 87 was our range. More women than men. Employed, seven said full-time and others did not report any data. Any previous episodes of low back pain? Yes, 15 of them. Length of the current episode. Keep in mind, we're only getting data from 21. Eight of them said over 12 months. So we're realizing we're skewing towards an older, less likely to be employed, probably lots of them retired, and lots of them with recurrent or chronic low back pain. Only one of whom was WSIB, MBA, or other coverage like that. The clinical features, based on the start back risk category as calculated at the physician's office, so I'll return to that point in a minute. Two rated into low, 11 rated into medium, and 8 rated into high. So here are their scores. We also asked, and if you were at one of my earlier talks where I was talking about the cultural challenges of a numeric pain rating scale, I'm aware that it's hypocritical to be presenting you data about a numeric pain rating scale. But how intense was your pain? Lots of these people reporting like median 7, median 9. And the Roland Morris indicating that with median 8 and median 18, with ranges 6 to 21 and 5 to 21, that some of these people were reporting substantial disability from low back pain. This thing is very sensitive. Try not to breathe on it. One of the things that was surprising to us was the fact that the start back score wasn't totally stable. What got reported out from the family physician's office was simply their risk category because just the way that we administered it. So we had low, medium, and high was coming in this way. But when we actually looked at how they did a baseline questionnaire, which we tried to get them to do within about less than a week of their recruitment and the visit, that we can see that quite a few people switched categories. It's clearly scoring a little bit different. We actually have the score data from this. I realized that on my previous slide, I was showing you the numbers from this, the 2, 11, and the 8. How many were referred to physiotherapists? If you think about the fact that the start back indicates that 11 of them should have been referred to some physiotherapist, 8 of them should have been referred to somebody who had the specialized psychosocial expertise, 5 of them were. One was high risk. Three of those 5 canceled before they came. One of them was high risk, high or medium. One was medium or high, by the phoned, set it up, and then canceled and said, seniors should get free therapy, which, you know, in the episode of Care Clinics, yes. But we weren't set up with our trained physiotherapist in an episode of Care Clinics, so that was not feasible. And one who was referred was low risk at the family health team visit. We didn't have data on the baseline questionnaire from that person. We'll all return to that under themes. One initiated assessment with a different PT at the same clinic, I think before they even saw the physician, and this is someone who had some experience with that particular clinic. It was actually the Queen's on-site PT clinic. And one came to PT and 2 follow-up appointments. That person was high risk and paid out of pocket. Before I go on to the qualitative, which explains a little bit about what's going on there, the quantitative piece, we also, one of our feasibility questions is, will they do the questionnaires? Because we had not just the numeric pain rating and the Roland Morris, we had a lot of questionnaires. And the 21 initiated the survey of the baseline, 23 and 22 initiated. And the asterisk is that actually most of them completed it. A small number had to be walked through it by our research assistant, but almost everyone who initiated a survey also finished it. So that the challenge is to get people to like click the Qualtrics or SurveyMonkey or whatever you're using, click the link and do it. But if they sit down to do it, they almost all do all questionnaires. So that's not our feasibility problem. And taking an average of 20 minutes each time. Thank you for that investment to our participants. We also did interviews, and so this was all with no compensation. We did provide some compensation for people who agreed to be interviewed. So the patient interviews were quite short, not very detailed, and so not a whole lot of thematic analysis needed. The themes that came out here is feedback on the StartBack tool. Most patients remembered completing the tool. Some needed some prompting. No problem with the items. Discussion of the StartBack results. We asked them, do you remember talking about it with the physician at the visit? Crickets, most of the time. No, they did not remember discussing it. As far as we know, the physicians did not discuss the StartBack results. They often got it in the waiting room, and the physician took it and scanned it into the chart, but there wasn't a conversation, even though our workshop had talked about the idea that it should be, we wanted it to be used as a bit of a conversation piece. Patients spontaneously raised often that the topic of visit, the reason for visiting their physician was wanting to have imaging arranged. We asked them about understanding the StartBack risk categorization, low, medium, high. Their understanding of that was highly variable. Some, but not all, in the medium and high risk thought that the categorization made sense to them. Patients in the low risk category, granted we didn't have very many of those people, they generally didn't agree. They thought, no, it's more serious than that. Matched treatments, as you can see from our numbers, and it when we interviewed, we got some of the same stuff. The treatment was typically not consistent with the StartBack risk category. Low risk patients referred to physio and medium high risk not referred. And capacity to pay came out pretty commonly in the patient interviews, often a barrier to seeking services. The themes from the physician interviews, and we interviewed, I should have these numbers, I'm pretty sure we got to 12 of 14 where we managed to get the interview, and we set up an interview guide and then did the coding based on the theoretical domains framework. And this is a framework commonly used in implementation science research around, what is needed in order to make the change, in order to implement the shift in practice. And so the domains in the theoretical domains framework in the original version are the 12 that are listed there. Almost all of what we found in the interviews could be coded to two of them. Again, this thing is really sensitive. Beliefs about consequences. So that's the physician's beliefs about the consequences of using the tool, and the physician's comments around environmental context and resources. Now it won't work. One, do just one. Beliefs about consequences in two categories. One, about actually using the tool. Facilitators, this is the way the TDF works, you identify facilitators and barriers. Facilitators is that physicians found the StartBack tool was helpful, that a concept of stratification fit with their clinical decision making, and the tool was helpful for identifying psychosocial factors that the physician might not otherwise have explored. So they were looking at the results, even if it doesn't seem that they were talking about it with their patient. A barrier is that the tool results do not necessarily change what the physician already knew. So this is actually kind of like the two flip sides. It's like, I already knew that, but it kind of reinforced what I already knew. So it's kind of a facilitator, kind of a barrier. The reluctance to use the tool in patients with long-standing low back pain. We had a lot of those people, and the physician felt like, well, why should I have them do this when it makes it look as if I'm going to change the management, but I don't have any other options for them. And a concern about labeling high risk, especially when patients had no access to the matched treatment. They raised this a lot even in the initial workshops, and said that this particular family health team, there are a lot of people who are not going to have the access, they're not going to have the employee benefits or whatever else it would take to have access to coverage for physiotherapy that's outside the public system. The beliefs about consequences about acting on the tool's recommendations. The facilitators are that physicians were generally supportive before and throughout of the concept of referral to PT for patients with low back pain. The barriers to acting on the tool's recommendations, right? One of the recommendations is low risk shouldn't be referred to physiotherapy. That's not needed. Is they said, well, if patients want it, why shouldn't I? Because physiotherapists do good work. Kind of hard to argue with that logic other than on the resource side. Patients in medium or high risk often don't have financial access. I've covered that before. It's just kept coming back and back and back. Physicians were unsure about what treatment would be provided by PT for high risk patients. We kind of went, well, you didn't want to sit through a long workshop where we would have explained that to you. So it's a flip side in you know, explaining that piece. And they were unsure about how people responded who received PT treatment. I'm pretty sure most of the physiotherapists who have gotten it would have done the letter back, but you know, there's always that communication piece. Around environmental context and resources, facilitators, the physicians were really grateful for the resources. Two resources we provided them. One, I had some PT students in their second year capstone project work on this with me, and they created a beautiful one-page handout. Two sides, general exercise, general recommendations, you know, about staying active, etc. And it was like a tear-off pad, and like physicians basically raved about them. It's like, can you give us more of these free color printouts? It's like, no, not the research budget's running out, but I get, thank you for saying it was beautiful. Another thing we did is we created postcards that said if they can't qualify for, if they don't have coverage, then here's the name and phone number of all the episode of care clinics that in the Kingston area. They're like, this is great. And we're pretty sure those postcards got used for way more than our study, which is fine because they just needed that information. The barriers were availability of PT, both around the access, which I've already covered. Only one PT in the region, only Graham, to our knowledge, was trained for the people in the high-risk category. They don't have a PT on site at that family health team. And they also, another barrier is that they didn't see it as their role to ask the patient to fill out the start back tool. Unless the study is getting the receptionist to do it, we're not quite sure whether that would stay implemented. And we also could not afford on this small feasibility study to build it into their EMR. And their EMR is where they do most of the other stuff. This was done on paper. So, reflections and conclusions. We can recruit physicians. Engagement and buy-in in the process, not quite as certain in a number of ways. We can recruit a very small number of patients in that flow. Our strategy with recruiting through clinic reception staff was a smart idea, and most of the patients recruited were not low risk, at least through that context. Patients who are recruited will mostly complete all questionnaires. Even if it takes about 20 minutes or up to half an hour, and even if it takes a couple of reminders to get started, they'll do it. Start back tool's easy to use, nobody objected to it, but difficult to get buy-in that the score or the risk category is relevant and actionable. And uncertain to us why the baseline score wasn't very stable. In this family health team, the patients and physicians were very, like lots and lots of times we got the reinforcement that capacity to pay for physiotherapy is a major barrier to finding, like why would I find out about the fact that I'm supposed to get physiotherapy when I can't afford it unless I pay, like I can't afford to pay out of pocket. It had been brought up when we started to implement this and it was reinforced in the physician interviews. But physicians are supportive that the Start Back tool is useful around making the psychosocial component of thinking about the reasons why low back pain may persist, to make that more overt and help remind them. But lots of system barriers to implementing matched treatments. So in closing, I would like to acknowledge the funding support. We had two sources of funding support to run this. Simon, with me as co, was a successful in the Queen's University Research Leaders Opportunities Fund. Also, though, this was funded by the Physiotherapy Foundation of Canada, OPA Kim Wolney grant, which is around looking at new system things, and we're really grateful for that support. We're grateful to the participants, the physicians and staff, so reception staff, et cetera, of the Queen's Family Health Team, and the participants through their role being recruited as patients at that family health team. And acknowledge my colleague, faculty member Catherine Donnelly, and a grad student and research assistant Amanda Mofina and Kevin Verrett, who have been pouring through the transcripts. And I said to them last Friday, I just need a few things for the physician slide for the OPA presentation. They're still working on that. Those were really rich interviews, and we'll have more to say about them when we're finished that analysis. I'm happy to take any questions. I can repeat it back, or if people are too shy to come to the mic. Yeah. Nope, you're it, Greg, go for it.
Okay, so that was a great presentation, and I think it's really important that this study was tried, considering the effectiveness of the study in the UK. Although it sounds like it maybe wasn't as successful as the UK one. If you could change one thing about the way you did this study, what do you think would have the most benefit for trying to improve it?
We continue to wonder whether we should have gone to a different family health team in the city. The reason why we went with this one is because they're so familiar with research that you basically kind of say, we're running a research study, and they go, where do I sign? But the complexities of, number one, that family health team, and I'm not sure it's all that representative of Kingston patients, that there might have been other family health teams where you'd have had more of a mix of capacity to pay. The other thing is that being such a, like, it's full of residents, and that every time the resident sees the patient instead of the physician, that complicates the problem of who's having the conversation about the start back tool. So I second guess whether or not we should have gone with the most academic family health team in the city for this one.
Is there one more? Last one over there.
I'll repeat the question after I hear it.
I was just wondering more. I think that start back tool sounds like it has a lot of good promise. When you said there was one physiotherapist trained, I think you said at the beginning that was Graham that went to the
Yep. Yes, it's around essentially cognitive behavioral approaches and addressing the fear associated with pain and pain catastrophizing and that sort of thing, and reframing and you know, Graham's description of it was, I'm still sort of doing the same thing, but I'm framing the conversation differently with patients when I think they're high, when I know they're high risk for persisting pain. Yeah. So it was a week-long course in the UK. I know that the Kiel group is looking at trying to run some courses in North America. I'm not sure yet if they've pulled off any of those. Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody.